from stpcatalyst.com.
Hi, Bill DeYoung here again with you. The Catalyst Sessions here again for a fabulous Friday. This gentleman you're looking at right here, that famous face, that's Palladium Paul himself, Mr. Paul Wilburn, executive director of the Palladium Theater, musician, writer, novelist, man about town, actor, radio, I mean, whatever. You know, Paul's the man, Mr. Creativity. I went on your website before you joined me here, and I'm like, how much stuff does this guy do? What, you know, you ever take a break?
I'm actually the laziest guy I know, believe it or not.
No, that's me.
Okay, well, maybe you're one ahead of me, but I always thought I was lazy and a procrastinator, but somehow I've just done things that were fun for me, and they keep turning out okay. So,
well, let's talk about Cigar City first, because that was big news this year. You won the gold medal award from the Florida Book Awards.
And I have the new gold medal edition up here.
Let's talk about this. I see something new on the cover here, Paul.
The gold medal. It doesn't look quite gold, but it is gold. It's gold.
What does that mean to you in the long run? Just it's prestige? You get new copies of the book? What does it mean?
We did do a new edition of the book, and we improved the look of the book. We were kind of on real hard deadline. I was the first book that St. Pete Press produced.
Yeah.
And we were on a really hard deadline to get them out before an event. And so the book came out and it was fine, but it had a lot of things that we would have fixed. And so having this success let us go back in and fix some things. It's a prettier book. The pictures look better. The design looks better. The writing hasn't changed. It's still the same stories that I did before. So content-wise, it's just a prettier book and cleaner book.
Is it kind of nice to say, you know, award-winning author? Paul Wilburn, gold medalist, is like PhD or, you know, MBE or something.
Well, Bill, let me tell you, I'll confess to a story that, you know, the biggest fear, I think we may have talked about this in the past, but my biggest fear with this project was, what if it sucks? You know, and Paul Wilburn, thinks he's a fiction writer, and boy, it sucks. Well, people liked the book, but before the book came out, I had applied for a little grant thinking I might have to publish this book myself. And the grant committee just trashed it. They trashed my application and said, this guy is a writer.
I know, you did tell me this story.
And so, you know, I actually thought maybe it did suck. So it's kind of nice to have this sort of recognition for your first book and to have it, you know, be able to say, hey, it's the best fiction book in Florida.
Well, tell me again what you did. I mean, you didn't tweak any of the writing. Was it sort of the position of the photographs or the quality of the photos? Or
the photos, the photos were too small the first time out. We made them bigger.
Because the photos have a lot to do with each chapter.
Yeah, I mean, the book was inspired by the photographs of David Audette and Bud Lee, who were two of the great photographers who were in Ybor at the time, and they were my buddies. And it was Bud's death, I think in 2015, 2016, that prompted me to really think about this. And we had all these great photos that my friend David Audette was sharing with me and putting them online. And so that's where the seed of the book came from. And so the photos are very important, even though the book is fiction, it does capture this feeling and the photos sort of tell you about it.
Yes.
So they're bigger in this edition. We added a giant shot from the Artisan Writers Ball of this 20-foot Pinocchio character we created.
That's
always good. With David
and Bud.
Attention
getter right there. Yeah.
Right there. He's got the nose that just keeps going.
He's got the nose, the whole deal, right?
Yeah. And also in that photo, Bud Lee is in the photo. David's in the photo. Several other key people from our group are there. So it's kind of nice to have that.
So you weren't able to get that in the first time is what you're saying.
Yeah. I had a more moody shot in there that didn't really play. This shot really plays well. So the book just looks better. We found a couple of typos we cleaned up and St. Pete Press did a great job with it. So I'm proud to have it out.
You have, and I don't think it's any secret, but you have a novel sort of somewhere in the pipe. And according to your website, it's called Trickle Down.
We've actually changed the name.
Got to change this on the website. What's it called?
Yeah, I know. It's changing websites is not as easy as you know, I think. So,
yeah. Yeah. My stuff is like vintage 2010 on mine.
Yeah. And I actually, I had a again, in all candor, I had a conversation with a good friend of mine in the book business who said, you know, you and a few baby boomers remember what trickle down is. And a lot of the people who you might want to sell your book to have no idea about who Ronald Reagan was, what the trickle down theory was. And
it's like, what is that, like making a reference to Fibber McGee and Molly?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, this closet where all the stuff comes falling out on you or something, you know. Right.
That one, yeah.
So he gave me some good advice. And the book is now, for the moment, is called How Dawn Dies. And that's a little more punchy. And
you got my attention. Again, it's like Pinocchio in the nose. I'm going out to Tombow and buying it as soon as it's there.
It hopes to come out. It'll be out in early 2021. I don't see any point in bringing a book out right now, even though you may be doing something like that. But right now, I love doing the book events. And I actually have a book event next week, my first live one since, you know, February probably.
Do tell.
You have to be a member of the Ybor City Rotary. But it's my first real book event in Ybor City, which is great. Actually, we did one more at HCC a while back, but this is the Ybor City Rotary and at the Columbia. Columbia's in the book, so I'm really excited about that.
You get a great lunch out of it, too.
Yeah, so I get a good lunch out of it, and I'll see a lot of my old Tampa buddies.
We'll talk about How Dawn Dies when, or whatever it ends up being called. When it's published, I know we'll talk about it, but if I may now... This is, you know, you're a journalist, and you said that fiction writing, even though it was based on something real, was a new thing for you. Let's put it that way. How different was writing a full novel, where you know that thread's got to go on for quite a while?
It does. The good thing about this one was I had written this as a screenplay, the start of it when I was in L.A., and it never really worked. But I liked the story and I liked the characters. I was out in L.A. playing the screenplay game while working for the Associated Press out there to pay the bills. And I didn't really like the screenplay game. If you've never been to LA or don't know, any producer in LA has these shelves and shelves of completed screenplays that are just, you know, gathering dust.
Yeah.
And it's not a pretty sight. And that is where most of them end up. So I've got two projects that I'm turning into books. The first one is now called How Dawn Dies, that were screenplays. So there was a superstructure there. But the stories got so much better when I started writing the prose.
Was there more confidence in your prose writing the second time around? I mean, after you'd done Cigar City.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Also, I'd done one, and so I kind of knew the muscles that you needed to flex and the what you needed to do. And this book was just filled with characters that I love, and I kind of let them do their thing. And they surprised me, like authors say. They always say, your characters surprise you. Well, they did.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, you know, Lisa Unger, everybody says pretty much that they told me the same thing, that the ones that I've spoken to. You know, you set them up and say, where are you going to go now?
And it's I don't know if you know this about me, but at the height of my journalism time, I was kind of roaming Florida for both the Tribune and the Times. And it was a great gig that many of my idols had worked that Rome, Florida gig in the past. And so I was so happy to have it. And so a lot of the backdrop for this book, which is Palm Beach and West Palm Beach, my first job was at the West Palm Beach paper, and also the Everglades. So I used all of this stuff, and it's set in 81. And Florida was just on the verge of becoming this mega state. At that point, there's still the old tourist stuff, the old crazy stuff, and a lot of stuff is set there. But you can see, you know, it's set on an Indian reservation, but they're planning the casino. So it's
you're right on the teetering on the edge there. I remember that era well.
Gives us some nice stuff to turn on.
As I remember, most of the late 70s drug people were starting their prison terms right around then.
They were getting close to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul. You're going back to live shows this weekend at the Palladium. Saturday is the very first one. I don't know who. It's Jose Ramirez is his name?
Yeah, I just left the sound check. This guy was from this area. He's from Costa Rica. I mean, he's Costa Rica's only great blues guy, I guess. But he's here. He lives in Riverview. He's been in D.C. But Jose placed second in what they called in the 2020 International Blues Challenge in Memphis, which means 1,000 bands show up. And of all those, he placed second. It's a huge thing. Selwyn Birchwood, who's great, won that a few years ago. He's Anson Funderburg, the great Texas guitarist, produced his new record. He's been touring all over the place, and he's opening up, and Anson is coming, driving in from Texas for the show. So he's going to play with him. So it's going to be a fun night. And unfortunately, I can only sell about 150 tickets. By the time we spaced everybody 6 feet, you know, then you
how difficult was that? And I think when we first talked about it, we wrote a story about it here. I think you said 181 seats. God bless you. Has it come down to 150 already?
The issue becomes...
Oh, the logistics of that must have been just awful.
Well, we're honestly, I'm not so much thinking about making money these first three shows. We're doing three shows every three Saturdays in a row. And the idea is just to get people in the building, learn what the mistakes are, learn what we can do. And so, you know, if people buy one seat, which a lot of people buy one seat or two seats, you got to put 6 feet around them. And by the time you've done that, we found out instead of 180, we can maybe do 150.
So 6 feet is roughly what, three empty seats?
Yeah. And you know, we a row in front and a row behind. So it's, it's just a complicated little, you know, math problem. And so we're encouraging people to come in smaller groups, you know, people you're comfortable with, but it is what it is. We're just trying to get open and it's working great. We're sold out for Saturday and we'll have comedy the next Saturday and then a jazz show the next one. And at the end, we're going to take 2 weeks off after that and figure out what went right and wrong and then hopefully keep going.
A couple of questions. So the Jose and Anson show is sold out Saturday.
We've got about 10 tickets left. So probably by the time people are listening, it might be sold out. You can always try to get a ticket. I'm recommending it. But we were just had a handful of tickets left when I left today.
Let's do a little math here. Not my strong suit. So you can take the lead here. So what's the capacity of Huff Hall, of the big room?
What's 830.
How many?
830.
Okay. Right. So help me through this. Yeah. That's as good as I'm going to get right there.
Let me explain what's going on and how, because I have to do the math. And I was.
How did you do it?
I'm an English major, you know. So fortunately, we have an accountant at the Palladium who helps me. But really, what we're doing, we have the nightclub called the Side Door downstairs.
Yeah.
And that, we sell 181 tickets. We book local talent, great bands and comedians and things down there.
Yeah.
And between selling beer and selling 181 seats, that makes money. And it's a good business and it pays the bands well. So all we're doing is moving these shows upstairs. So the economics work pretty well for me at 150 to 180. It's sort of what I would do normally in that room. So the problem for us opening up is we're a rental house as well. And, you know, that we want to do the Nutcracker with St. Pete Ballet. Well, can they only sell 180 seats? Can they only sell 200? Normally they have 400 per show.
And therefore not be able to afford the rent.
Yeah, it impacts the rent. But honestly, these are just problems we're learning to deal with. You've got to, it's the nature of coming back at the end of the COVID. And I think we're better off, Bill, than like a Straz Center, a Mahaffey, a Ruth Eckerd, because I'm more flexible. My price range is lower. I don't have to sell, you know, I don't have to spend $25,000, $30,000 or $100,000 on an act. So we're able to try these things out and we might even make a buck or two.
Isn't you say bringing this sort of Side Door model to the other room, but isn't the overhead higher there? I mean, the lights and the crew and no,
we only do one show at a time at the Palladium. I can't do a show upstairs and downstairs at the same time. So for me to do a show, it costs the same. I mean, upstairs I have to bring in maybe a few more crew, but when we're doing this model, my full-time staff is going to be there. We're all there. I've been able to keep my full-time staff on. We've actually got volunteers who are willing to show up and take a chance with us too. So it's really, the costs are about the same. It's
so 150 is here's that math thing again.
Yeah.
It's less than 25% of the room, right? So what's your model there? You're looking like, okay, we'll sell 20% of the hall?
I honestly, I'm avoiding the percentage call because we are allowed, we could go 50%.
Yeah.
And at this point, the rules keep changing. My thing is, my wife and I are only supporting businesses that make us feel safe when we go there.
Yeah.
And that's what we want the Palladium to be. I want people to feel like we're doing everything for their safety. They can enjoy live music in a situation where they're not feeling compromised. And so for us, it's the distance. I'm willing to do smaller crowds just to get it going. And we'll see. We're taking it. Every show is a new set of discussions and decisions.
But, well, as you say, you'll get these three done in October and then sort of, what do they call Monday morning quarterback or whatever, and sort of sit there and go, okay, this is what we could have done or should have done differently, better. Let's say one more thing. Let's say I had five of us. We all really want to go to see Ward Smith, who's very funny.
Yeah.
Hey Ward, shout out to Ward. Can we all sit together, or are you gonna break us up? You can.
I want you guys to sit together. It helps me.
Just not next to other people, right?
Right. I want people to come. Hope we have groups of 10, you know, because we have, my wife and I are coming with another couple that we're comfortable sitting with. And a lot of people have that. We want them to buy in those sizes because that gives us more, we're able to get more people in the building rather than you come by yourself and I have to put 6 feet around you. So, yeah. But the trick is we want them to buy at the same time. It's a little too complicated for them. You to say, look, I bought two tickets and I want to sit with Paul. Well, that's for, in this circumstances, it's a little too complicated for our box office. We're having to assign seats essentially. So,
and anyway, these are reserved seats too. It's not just, okay.
No, they're reserved seats.
I'll take you to like row 7 and you guys sit in these marked places.
Right. You have a number. When we've emailed people their seats, we'll see, you know, we're going to learn, Bill. It's going to be a learning experience.
The third show, just to put it out there on the 17th, is Nate Najjar, who is certainly great. Who's the other guitar players? Phil
Fest, F-E-S-T. Yes. Phil's son of a Brazilian piano player and who was Manfredo Fest, who was one of my heroes. I used to see him.
I was going
to
say, he's related to Manfredo Fest.
That's his son.
Wow.
Yeah, and I loved Manfredo. And Phil and Nate have done this show a couple of times before for us up in the nightclub. And it always sells out. And it's already sold almost 100 tickets. And
it's just the two of them, or is there a band?
It's the two of them with a rhythm section, bass and drums. And that's all they need. Those two guys on guitar and a little rhythm section is more than enough.
How cool is that? Yeah. How did you decide who the first three of the guinea pigs were going to be? I mean, was it obvious?
Jose was on the books for the CD release party a year ago around this time.
Okay.
And I've been wanting to get him in the building. He's hot right now. Obviously he's selling we could sell probably 300 tickets for this show if we could. Ward Smith sort of curates our comedy for us. And Ward and I talk all the time. And he said, the comics have got incredible material and nowhere to do it. So I thought, let's do stand-up comedy because God knows in this environment right now, comedy is great.
We can use it. Yeah.
And then we had, and Nate's show was one that we had to cancel during the earlier in the year. So I'm trying to bring back all the shows. I still have people holding tickets for shows that we had to cancel. And they're nice enough to say, we'll take our tickets when the show comes back.
Do you have sort of things on deck? Like, I know what the next three are going to be.
I do.
But you're not going to tell us
about them.
Yeah.
We're doing one of the shows that I had to cancel was this wonderful jazz singer named Ona Karai. Mm-hmm. And she's doing.
She's Spanish, yes.
Even more particular than that. I'm trying to remember. She does a particular style of jazz and singing.
I wish I could remember too, but I
know, and we should know that.
She's really great.
She's great, and I saw her doing about a year ago. Saw her doing a jazz Beatles show, and so these are going to be all interpretation of Beatles songs with her great style and a great band, and so that's in early November.
That's great.
Damon Fowler is coming back with he always does a pre-Turkey Day. Show. He's going to do a show with it. He's got a great new five-piece band with TC Carr and a keyboard player. That band will be there, and I think Betty Fox is coming to perform with them. And that we've got a couple more, but along those lines, my biggest thing is to get our local bands paid and working again.
Yes, you've said this. That's really important to you. I mean, I like the idea that you're reaching out to the community first. You know, it's like, well, I could probably get Jane Monheit or somebody in here, right, probably, but I want the sort of area people first. Let's start this way.
My thing is, and I say this too many times, is if your local artists and performers can't afford to live in your community, you're not really an arts community. You're just a bus and truck community where people come through and say, hey, it's great to be in. Where are we?
Yeah.
But so you wrote about our live streaming show, which that's all local performers who we're paying to put it on live stream.
Palladium Presents. Let's shift there, because that was my next question.
I didn't want to get ahead of you. I thought I might be getting ahead of you there.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, it's all very logical and kind of flowing. You know, you did start doing these recorded events, a couple of concerts. I just heard from Bill Levengood, and I guess you've done his play, or that's coming up or something.
We recorded a play of his. We've done, we're going to release five shows.
Yeah.
And we're calling it now Palladium Live. We kind of switched to Palladium Live, just FYI.
Excuse me. Yeah. Change my notes here.
We were calling it Palladium Presents when you wrote it, but everything, we're making this up as we go along.
Yeah, I know the feeling, yeah.
So we're going to release five and then release a few more. We've got a dance one. We've got a couple of jazz ones. And as things get edited and we like them, we're gonna put them out and sell tickets. And I think it's going to be a great thing. And ultimately, we'll also be able to live stream.
Live
stream these. But the streaming piece of equipment that we need is on back order, if you can believe it. Everybody's buying every.
Hey, I mean, I latched onto Zoom early. I'm not letting go. What can I tell you? So just to cover it, these are taped in real time. Taped being the operative word. They're recorded in real time in the main room. You already three or four cameras.
Four cameras.
Really great sound.
With great sound.
Then they're edited
it down.
Okay. And will they all come out together, like behind a paywall, or how's this going to work?
We're going to release one. There's going to be like five Thursdays. We're going to release them on Thursdays. They're available for 48 hours. That's sort of how you can, with live, it's the way you can do it and not get into other licensing issues. 48 hours is about one day around the world, apparently. So you can, for 48 hours.
Okay.
I don't understand it, but
it's math again, man.
It's math again. But you'll be able to buy a ticket for one show or buy all five, and we'll release them over the next couple months, and it's going to be nice. And then the bands get to keep the video for their use as well, and the performers. We're doing a dance piece with Helen French and a bunch of local dancers, another group that we try to support.
Yeah.
And I've got one new announcement that's something you don't know about.
Well, let's have it, man.
We are also launching a thing called the Palladium Creative Class of 2021. And it goes exactly to this thing of supporting your local artists.
Yeah.
You know, we've built shows around local artists forever, and I pay them as well as I can pay anybody. We pay them good money to perform, but we never have paid them to create shows. You know, we expect them to create the show and bring it to me, and then I'll pay you for doing it. Well, we've come up with a donor and some funds, and we're going to be creating this creative class and
a seed fund. Wow.
Seed fund.
Yeah.
Between $2,500 and $5,000 to artists that we choose. And there'll be 10 to 12 of them to create work for the Palladium. And then we'll pay them for putting that work on, but they'll also get paid. If you're a jazz guy, get paid to bring the guys in to rehearse. You know, it's like, so I'm excited.
Oh, I'll be interested in hearing, the criteria and how you're putting this together. And,
we're setting up an application for the future, but the first time around, and this is donated money. It's not state money. It's not tax money. So we're I feel like we should be able to pick who we like. And we're picking people who perform at the Palladium and who are the best, in our opinion, the best talent. And then in the next year, we'll have an application form so other folks who felt, well, I should be in there, can apply and will be considered. But the
creative
first year,
class of 2021, is that what you called it?
We're calling it Palladium Creative Class of 2021. Yeah. And the next year will be obviously 2022, and hopefully we can continue this. It's been a dream of mine for a long time, but we've gotten some funds that we can actually do it now.
That's brilliant. Are you kind of relieved that, I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask it anyway, that you can finally like open the door and have at least a few people come into the room?
You know, yeah. Basically, by keeping our, we kept our full-time staff on, you know, it's like 8 to 10 people, depending on how you count it, is that's all that has been is just a withdrawal every month, you know. Yeah. And we had an incredible business going, and people depended on us for not only to get paid, but also for their enjoyment. We were a big part of people's lives. So, you know, I don't know about you, but I've actually lost one friend and heard about other folks who this isolation has been bad. I mean, if you're mentally shaky, this has been a terrible time. And I think entertainment is one of the things we need. You know, I heard a great theory the other day that why is everybody so mad and yelling and why are all this destruction and everything? There's no sports. You can't go out and stand in this, you know, you can't yell. You can't get out in the middle of a crowd and scream
you
your guts out.
You can't work it off.
You can't work it off. And so I think it's good for the world for us to come back, and certainly good for our business to find ways to come back.
We certainly wish you, oh my God, all the best. So there may be a few tickets by the time folks are hearing this to Saturday's performance.
Check out online. I don't think they're all gone, but they're going fast.
Go to mypalladium.org and check it out. Mm-hmm. Ward Smith and Friends Comedy is on the 10th. And Manfredo Fest on Phil and Nate and AJ are on the 17th. More to be announced. How soon?
Some of these other shows will be going up in the next few days, probably next week. Some of these others in November will go on sale. We're doing a lot of, you know, Nutcracker is going to be there. We're doing a big holiday show. So more to come, but we are going to do three and then take 2 weeks off to kind of assess how things went and make sure we're doing everything right.
One more thing. I mean, it is conceivable, isn't it, that should these things, A, be very successful, and looks like they're going to be, B, come off safely, which we all hope and pray they will, and I guess C or D, wherever I was, there's a lot of interest. It is conceivable.
Is the alphabet also a problem for you? First math,
yeah.
And now the alphabet.
Where I was. D, F, C. Anyway, it's conceivable that once all those things have passed, you'll do more. You might add more seats. Who knows?
Okay.
Right? This is
I
all
think we're
going to
figure out
fluid.
The seating situation a little better, too. That was part of it.
Yeah.
That was part of it. And, Bill, there's one plug I've got to make here, and it's not for us. The reason we are able to come back, we were trying to come back. We had a season scheduled to come back in August. Mm. And Florida, and you know, we mishandled this virus so badly that we came out into June. The 1st of June, the numbers were low. Then everything opened up, and they skyrocketed. I can't open unless the numbers stay way down. And Pinellas and St. Pete government, the county commission, and I give them credit, and the mayor and the city council, they have enforced, you know, the mask ordinance and other things. And I don't care what you say about freedom or anything. My business is able to reopen because they reduced the numbers down below 5%. It's been consistently 3% in Pinellas and St. Pete. That allows me to do business. When it goes to 10%, that means I don't do business.
Yeah.
So what's good for business is getting the numbers low and making people, you know, if this was World War II, everybody agreed we've got to make sacrifices. Somehow we're in a country now where people are saying, oh, I don't have to make a sacrifice. I have freedom. Not freedom to make me sick, not freedom to keep my business from opening. I get a little passionate about this because that's the real fact. I can do business. The world can reopen if we are vigilant. And so we should say thank you to these elected officials who have actually done something that we can point to and say that was the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And you know, hopefully it's just going to keep getting better and better. It is my wish and you know, my prayer, as it were, and
me too,
all of
and
those things,
you know. So anyway, that's my soapbox.
Yeah, okay. We'll be editing that part out, Phil.
Yeah, okay. get that out for.
Hey, what's going on with your band, with your quartet?
It's Friday, so I'm not, I'm going to leave this call, and we're going to rehearse tonight. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, so we've been working. We actually we were taped for as the guinea pigs for the Palladium thing, and I didn't think we were quite good enough. So we're going to go back and do a little more.
Are you going to wear the same clothes and pretend?
I hope so. Yeah. And get the same makeup and not, put my pen on the right side or whatever.
Yeah.
But we're having a lot of fun, and it's been a good thing for us. This isolation, I've been able to practice my piano a lot more, and this group is really fun. And it's just two husbands and wives. I was just two couples, and they happen to be really, my wife and the other singer are great. Their voices blend, so it's fun. So we're doing that tonight after this.
Tell us again the name of the group.
Well, right now it's called. It's like Palladium Live. We keep changing.
Yeah.
Seventh Avenue Picnic. We
was that what it was called last month?
No, it was probably called something else last month. we haven't had to play out, so you don't really need a name. In the band business, until you actually put it on a marquee.
Hey, you're the monkeys. So you can be anything you want.
Anything you want. So someday we might have a gig.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing
Phil,
today.
So man. Good to see you.
We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks so much. Glad you're doing this.
From stpetecatalyst.com.